Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, listen, there's certain things you hate to hear. My time in Baghdad, more than once hearing troops in contact over the radio is the sound that gives chills. The other thing you don't want to hear, I'm sure, as an air traffic controller or anybody, is aircraft down. And we had a bad situation right now in D.C. out of an airport that I love, my time at the Pentagon especially. I can't tell you how many times I flew out of DCA, Reagan National. And the approach is straight down the Potomac onto the airfield. And so I know the area. I understand the lay of the land. I know that there's a very congested environment. It's probably a heavy on stimuli kind of environment because it's in the middle of a major metropolitan area. I mean, like in the middle. It's not on the outskirts like Dulles would be. It's in the middle. But that being said, I can't tell you how much time I've spent in Blackhawks. But I've never been a crew chief in a Blackhawk, obviously. And then I came across a friend of the show this morning on social media, Mark McEthran. And Mark is the host of the Bearded Federalist podcast and just a rock-solid conservative, a right-side ruffian. But what I didn't know was he was also a hard striper. He was an E-5 crew chief on Blackhawks, and he's got some perspective. And he's actually on the phone right now. Mark McEthran, how you doing, man?
I am blessed, Phil. Better than I deserve. Long time right side ruffian, and what an honor to be on the show with you today.
Oh, man. Well, thank you for what you do, and thank you for your service, and thank you for being in the mix on conservative values and all. And I know, by the way, you went viral today, and you're actually going to be on, I think, News Nation tonight, too, aren't you?
That's right, 9 p.m. with Ashley Banfield. It's crazy. but I'm just hoping I do these soldiers and their families right today.
Well, I have no doubt you will. Thank you for your service, by the way. So let me ask you this, man. How much time did you spend in the Army?
6 years, 2 months, and 4 days. I was extended while I was on medical reserve and I ended up being medically retired after that amount of time, but it was a quick and wild 6 years of the best job I ever had. It was great. It ruined roller coasters for me, but other than that, it was fun.
Were you in the aviation branch the entire time?
Yes, I was, yep.
And so you earned the spot as a crew chief on a Blackhawk. Where were you? Who'd you serve with?
So I was initially out of the 159th Aviation out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And then I went to Korea for a couple of years and then back in the air assault loop to Fort Campbell. So that was pretty much it. Just from 2000 to 2000, well, January 2007. So
that's good duty, man. So listen, you put a post out this morning in the wake of this crash. And granted, I think every third post is somebody who's an expert now on social media about something to do with aviation. And
yeah.
But I read yours, and there's no denying it. I mean, you've been there, done that. And what I thought was huge was you didn't try to assign blame, but you did talk about from a firsthand perspective what life is like inside the Black Hawk as you're flying, and then you also assess that from the major stimuli that comes from being in a major metropolitan environment. So give us the lay of the land, brother. What must that have been like and going on at the time of the accident?
Sure. Yeah, no, their hands are full all the time. When you're flying those aircraft, there's a lot of coordination going on. There's a lot of stimulus coming from every direction. The pilots are reading. One pilot is literally reading a checklist from their on their lap, an actual physical paper book. It's not up on a HUD display or anything like that. It's attached to their leg, and they'll be reading through their checklist, and it's required by law that they go through that. From what I understand, this aircraft had just finished refueling, so that's at least 2.5 hours of flight already there. Do a refuel, back at it. Fatigue starts to set in. So you're reading off that checklist and making sure you're doing everything correctly. Well, another pilot, they're pulling the collective on that aircraft. get altitude and get speed, which means their eyes are likely looking at the torque indicators, the rotor speed indicators, all the information on the panel dealing with the actual mechanics of the aircraft. The crew chief normally does airspace surveillance and obstacle avoidance.
That'd be you.
We are, yep, that's what I would be doing. Usually I literally would have my head out the window where I can look up, down, and behind us and all around. However, there's occasionally times where I need to come back inside the aircraft and assist the pilots with fuel checks. So I'll be looking at the fuel gauges and the clocks and writing them down to notate that so I can do it again in a little bit and do the math to figure out the rate of burn. So pilots are doing math. I'm doing math. Everyone's listening to a bunch of radios. You got a lot of chatter going on in a space like that. Then you've got all the stimuli from all the lights and stuff happening around you. It gets pretty pretty chaotic in there. And a crew that's worked together for a while, you learn how to work together like that. And it becomes kind of a symphony of action. That's kind of the chaos that they're dealing with.
Well, and you're right. It's organized chaos the entire time because the stimuli is not the same every second. It's changing as you go. And I can just tell you, as an Army jump master, having to do outside air safety checks just for the approach to the drop zone, you're literally outside the bird, like you said, looking up, down, forwards, backwards, the whole thing, scanning for outside air safety issues. But when all that's going on right now in a major metropolitan environment, I don't know if you ever flew. Apparently, you didn't fly out of Belvoir at all, did you?
No, not as a crew chief. I did support that unit later. When I got out of the military, I was a contractor and still involved in Army Aviation for many years there. And I fielded them their servers and laptops and stuff to do all of their flight records and things there. Wow. So I'm familiar with the area and that unit.
Well, am I correct in saying that the guys out of Belvoir fly the variant of the Black Hawk called the VH-60, which is designed for VIP travel? Is that correct?
Yes, they do have a branch that does that. They support all the ambassadors and whatnot in that area. They have beautiful birds.
Well, they're
usually very
the shiny ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. And they're usually very well trained guys. Like they have high hours. I think I read today that this crew chief had 1,000 hours.
Wow.
On that bird, so. Yep, they're usually pretty well trained.
Well, that was my next question. I think you may have just answered it. So this particular crew, being in that regiment, that aviation regiment, are they hand selected? Do they have to kind of earn the right to be in this unit with more experience than the average, or is this like just something that's just a matter of, you know,
now,
being assigned?
That particular unit is not quite like that. You just come down on a PERSGRAM assignment and PCS there when the Army sends you there. But that is some of the details I have. When I was in Korea, the unit I served with there had a VIP branch as well. So you will find that in various units. Fort Campbell has their own unit like that. And so this one, located right there in D.C., you can imagine the VIPs that they take care of.
Well, yeah, I can. In fact, it's not uncommon, apparently, this unit to actually fly the SecDef himself. But,
correct.
Well, listen, I mean, I don't know, and I don't know all the ins and outs. I did see that someone just posted, like I said, everybody's an expert right now, but I did see that someone just posted a moment ago that the approach to runway 33, which is where the incoming plane was en route, and we don't know who was at fault, air traffic control, the pilots of either aircraft, we don't know, if anybody. But what I am seeing here is someone is saying that if you look it up right now, max altitude for helos that were flying across the approach to runway 33 would have been 200 feet AGL. And these guys in the 60 were flying at 350 AGL, above ground level. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, that's common. So after every flight that we do, we have, I mean, you're familiar with this process, but after every mission we do an after-action review. We cover what went right, what went wrong, and how to mitigate it. And there's never a flight that you are on, there's never a mission that you do where you do not have things in the what went wrong category. It always happens. And so these are humans, and they make mistakes. And they're, like we said, there's a lot of stimulus, a lot of things going on there. So being out of position a couple hundred feet not unusual. It's common, it's frequent, it happens. It's not supposed to. We are trained to not do that, but it, like we said, we get task overload and exhaustion, fatigue hitting in there, and then the potential for mistakes and errors increase. And there's anytime you see an accident report on aircraft, it's a series of contributing factors. It's never one thing or one person to hold responsible here. It's always a whole series. We have air traffic control calling out, asking that aircraft, hey, do you see that other aircraft? That's not a helpful question. When you're in the aircraft, you need to hear, do you see that aircraft at 12 o'clock, 3 miles out, 100 feet above you?
Yeah.
I need the direction, altitude, and the distance. And so you add to that, you know, they're flying at night dealing with lights. Lights are on the ground in a major city like that. Lights on aircraft can get buried in there. We have optical illusions that happen just because there's no reference points in the sky. You would have a common one that would happen is called continuous. My brain's forgetting.
The continuous parallax or
It's a motion parallax.
Yeah.
It is a motion parallax, but it's a way I would train my soldiers with that is I'd take a flashlight and hold it in front of their face, and I'd show if I moved it left, right, up, or down, they can tell it's not coming at them. But when you hold it straight at them and you come towards them, it's not moving. So
yeah.
If you have a light that's buried in the lights of the city that's not moving, you may not see that.
Yeah.
And you're on a collision course. There's a lot of factors that can come into play. We are trained to observe that, recognize that, and try to deal with that. But again, it's task overload and chaos. I see the pilot had one of the pilots was a female that had 500 flight hours. That's not very much, but she was probably under the supervision of a more advanced pilot that's in charge there. And so,
well, it's a sad situation, no matter how you look at it. And they were flying, and people don't realize too, 200 to 300 feet. That's not really high. It sounds like it is. But when you're sitting on the ground looking up, you can see the whites of their eyes if the doors are open. I mean, it's like they're flying at a reasonably low level. I wouldn't call it nap of the earth, but they're flying low level technically through the city. Am I right?
Absolutely, it's a 4 second drop.
Yeah,
it's very low.
Yeah. Well, listen, Mark, again, thanks for your service. Thanks for who you are. Thanks for being a part of the Right Side Ruffian family. And we appreciate you making time for us today, man, bringing some perspective.
It's absolutely an honor for all of the above, Phil. Thank you.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
All right, I ran long to be with Mark as long as I could, but I got to go to a break right now. But listen, there's a perspective you're not hearing anywhere else. There's what it might have been like to be inside the crew. Can you imagine? You're trying to blend the lights of aircraft that are nearby you with lights of the city that you're flying at literally below some of the rooftop levels as you come through the city, flying along the rivers, and then calamity. Aircraft down. All right, God bless them. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.